Thanks. This is Don.
Hey, Don. This is Stephen Vaden.
Ah, appreciate the call. Thank you. It's unusual even to be a little bit early. That's great. Appreciate that. I've got a tape running. I'll put you to work, all right? We've got...
All right.
10 minutes is what I was told?
Yes, sir.
Great. I'll watch the clock here. Deputy Secretary, first of all, if we can talk on the trade and tariff standpoint, we're awaiting the Supreme Court decision on the President's Emergency Powers Authority. From your perspective, what's at stake for agriculture with this ruling?
I mean, what's at stake with it for agriculture are the tools that the President has used to force open markets. It took a while because negotiations are difficult, but you have seen from the President's recent trips to Asia, every country he was stopping at, there were wins for agriculture, and not just China, but all of Southeast Asia, countries like Pakistan, Japan, they've all come to the table offering greater market access. Just last week, I had several meetings with representatives from the government of Uzbekistan, a country that has literally never purchased from American agriculture before to any great extent. They're now making major purchases of both soybeans and cotton. And all of this is because the President has used these tools to bring countries to the table, and ag is at the top of the list of market access points we want. From my perspective, that's what's on the line.
Are contingency plans in place if the court rejects this current approach?
Well, obviously, that's the Treasury Department and the United States Trade Representatives, as well as the Commerce Department's purview, but they've got some very fine lawyers. Jamison Greer is an outstanding lawyer. Lawyers are always thinking about a worst-case scenario, so I have little doubt that they've got contingency plans over there, and it's my hope they don't have to use them.
You talked about the trip to Southeast Asia, China, of course, the big get. How confident are you that China is going to be able to purchase that 12 million tons of U.S. soybeans before the end of this calendar year?
I'm confident that the Chinese understand that Joe Biden is no longer in the White House. That means that if they don't live up to their arrangements, Donald Trump will do something. Donald Trump understands the deal that he's made, and he expects the Chinese to comply. We think the Chinese will comply, but in case they don't, you can just look at the President's actions. Anytime a country backs off of a commitment they have made to him and to the American people, he responds in kind. If there's one thing that I have complete confidence in, that's anyone who crosses an agreement made with President Trump, it does not end well for them. And it's for that reason that I believe farmers will see the purchases roll in that the Chinese have committed to.
Deputy Secretary, watching what's happening in Washington, waiting for the government to reopen, once that happens, how quickly will USDA be able to respond with emergency relief for farmers and ranchers that we've discussed?
Well, first we've got to get everybody back in the building. People have been, this shutdown has lasted so long, Don, that many of our employees are going to be locked out of their computer systems, because if you don't, under government rules, if you don't access your computer system at least once in a 30-day period, you get locked out and you have to start the whole process over again. So I just give that as an example of some of the needless hurdles that this, at this point, 42, 43 days of posturing the Democrats have done has slowed the American people's business, all for achieving, so far as I can tell, nothing other than what they could have gotten more than 40 days ago, a simple vote on the Senate floor where people can express their opinions, and we can still see what the will of the Senate is. We are moving very quickly with regard to all of the many things that have been delayed. Obviously, farmer relief is one of those items. I don't want to get ahead of the Secretary or the President, but I feel confident that we'll have an announcement coming forward in due time. But one of the things that we've got to take into account, Don, and that I don't want people to forget, is this is not aid for aid's sake. This is aid as a bridge to get to 2026. And for that reason, we have to take into account current market conditions. When you and I spoke earlier this year at FarmFest, look at the soybean price then compared to the soybean price now. We've hit 15-month highs in soybean prices because of the deals that have recently been cut in Asia. That's going to need to be taken into account for any aid payments, because obviously the price of commodities have risen. That's what we want. We want market-based returns. And because the numbers have changed, our numbers will necessarily change.
At the same time, those input costs going into 26 are continuing to trend upward. There's some fertilizer categories that are expected to be 30% more than what they were when they were high a year ago. Seed, chemistry, land rents, everything else seems to be trending higher. What do you tell the farmer that's trying to make that bridge into 2026?
You've hit the nail on the head. Input costs are as much, if not more, than an issue as to what the market prices are. During the shutdown, I have been able to hold meetings with, for example, BHP, a major Australian mining company that is working to bring on millions upon millions of new tons of supply with a project that they are developing in Saskatchewan, and that we expect to come online as early as 2027, providing a new market entrant outside the current duopoly, which governs prices here in the United States for potash. The president is well aware, the secretary is well aware of the strains that farmers is facing, and I think your listeners can stay tuned in the days and weeks ahead for a series of announcements about things this administration is going to do focused on input prices. And you saw the first of those with the president calling for an antitrust investigation of the meatpacking industry. We need to make certain that farmers are treated fairly, that consumers are getting a good deal, and no one is using illegal market power in order to jack up the prices consumers are being paid, or depress the prices our farmers are being paid. And that is the first of many such looks that we're going to take at different elements of the farm economy in order to see to it that no one is getting a raw deal. And you just listed just a few moments ago, fertilizer, equipment, seed, chemicals, the other areas of the farm economy that need examination.
This is the second time that the Trump administration has been involved in a Justice Department Packer investigation. Do you expect tangible results with this go-round?
So I expect that when we look at the entire input picture, that there will be tangible results. Do I expect that every single sector is engaged in an antitrust conspiracy? No, Don, I don't. That would be unrealistic. And quite frankly, it would be incredibly worrying if that were the case, because it would mean that our antitrust enforcers had been asleep at the wheel and that people were getting a raw deal. But I do have little doubt that with regard to certain sectors, that there are some very good questions that need to be asked, particularly when it comes to fertilizer, which you identified a few moments ago, as well as the restrictions put on people who buy very expensive agricultural equipment. I mean, when you're buying a piece of equipment, Don, that costs more than a Rolls-Royce, and yet it's simpler, you have more choices, rather, in terms of if you were buying a Rolls-Royce instead, of where you can buy it and what you can do with it once you've purchased it, we have a problem. When you purchase a piece of equipment, it should be yours. You should have the right to repair it as you see fit. You should have the right to pick from whom you wish to purchase it and not be limited based on geography. And you should have the ability, if you want, to purchase parts from someone other than the original equipment manufacturer. And all of these limits that are placed on farmers do one thing, and that's jack up their costs and jack up the profits of the companies that are putting these highly legally questionable restrictions on what farmers can do and how they purchase their equipment. So I'm looking forward to taking a deeper dive into some of these industries and asking the questions of these companies that so many farmers ask you, ask me, and ask their elected representatives when you go out and meet with them one-on-one about why they're facing these restrictions when there are other similar things in the economy that we all know, like a car, that don't have these types of restrictions.
One final question. Senate passing a one-year farm bill extension, the 2018 farm bill, third time we've gone through an extension. What are the prospects you see for a five-year farm bill next year, particularly in an election year?
You know, it's my hope that we will get our budgetary house in order, and I am thankful, and I want your listeners to know that as part of the compromise that the Congress is considering today is a bill to give USDA full-year appropriations. And if that bill passes, that means, at least with regard to the Department of Agriculture, We will not be in shutdown land for the remainder of this budgetary year. We will have full year appropriations so that even if there are hiccups down the road, they will not affect USDA. We will soldier on if this bill passes. And that means that we need to turn our attention to things like passing the five-year farm bill to wrap up the items that couldn't be included in the One Big Beautiful Bill Act, considering changes to competition policy, seeing to it that the grain standards are reauthorized for another period. There is a growing list of items that are backlogged in Congress, E15, that we haven't been able to turn to because all of the focus has been on the shutdown and when we're going to have a budget. So my hope is that when Congress gives us our budget, we will be able then to turn to those serious policy items which rural America needs to pass as soon as possible so it can have not only the confidence of knowing these things have been taken care of, but items with which people can start making investments, making business decisions, and making rural America's economy grow.
Deputy Secretary, you've been very generous with your time. Thank you so much. I appreciate the chance to visit.
Thank you, Don. Appreciate it very much.
You bet. Take care. Thank you.